The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 20th of November, 2020. On the podcast today, John Wood, CEO of Infrastrata, provides an overview of their operations, which are a gas storage facility in Northern Ireland, Harland Wolff shipyards in Belfast and North Devon. Also on the podcast, George Franceschiadis, Executive Chairman of Alba Mineral Resources, explains why they've extended their gold exploration area in Wales. Plus, Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about the COVID vaccines and dividends. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. You can see both these lists, in fact, top 10 visions of these lists, at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll also see lots of other content. In fact, there's an article there about Trackwise Designs, raises £11 million at £2 in advance of IHT manufacturing. Fusion Antibodies, there's an article there as well. And don't forget, there's videos there and our COVID-19 index. Biggest riser today on that index is Gene Drive, up 8% to 59.50. And biggest fall, actually, is Fusion Antibodies, down 10% to 112. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Wood, Chief Executive Officer of Infrastrata. That's INFA. John, thanks for joining me.
Hi, good afternoon. Good to talk to you again. It's been a while.
Yeah, well, listen, we just looked it up and I said it's almost 2 years ago. You know, it was in November last, in 2018 we last spoke. And of course, a lot has changed there. The company's sort of shape and profile has changed. So we'll discuss that and we'll talk about a bit more detail about what the projects going on there. But before we do, John, an overview, if you will, a summary. Infrastrata, tell us what it's all about.
We're a strategic infrastructure organisation. You know, we've got the Island McGee gas storage project that will be a project that will transition to hydrogen later in life. So a key strategic asset there. And we also own the iconic Harland and Wolff shipyard in Belfast that we acquired back in December 2019. And we acquired the Appledore shipyard down in Devon on the 26th of August this year. So really an organisation with strategic assets. The two docks in Belfast are strategic. The dock in Appledore is strategic. The gas storage project, strategic. So look, we're really on the journey, moving forward. So look, I think it's a really exciting time, with all things moving forward here at the moment.
Yeah. Okay, so three parts now, shipyard, two shipyard, and the gas storage. So took us through, because of course, when I first talked to you, then you just come on, and it was all about the gas storage. So where are you with that at the moment?
Look, the gas storage project, we had a few things to sort out that we spent last year sorting out in tidying up the feed. That project's pretty much ready to go. We've got an offtake provider on board. There's one thing we're waiting on, and that's the marine license, which we hope to have in place by the end of this year. Then hopefully we should get FID taken in the first half of next year for that project. Mm. Now, look, when we were looking at that project and we were looking at the economics of that project, we were looking at how to build bigger modules for the gas processing plant and get them to site. That's when we first started looking at the Harland and Wolff shipyard. Looking at the shipyard gives us an opportunity to take a chunk off the cash flow and probably put about 30 to 40 million of fabrication work through the yard for that project. So I think you look at all the strategic infrastructure projects that we will look at, and I'll talk about the future and the vision a bit later as we work through. but, you know, vertical integration and being able to keep some of that cash inside the group for this comes through the supply chain rather than subcontracting all the work out is something that really attracted me. And look, if you look back at my career, I started off as an engineering officer in the Merchant Navy, went through on ships, shipyards, ship repair, building vessels, repairing vessels. And I, you know, more recently, I ran the Marine Division for BAE Systems out in Australia. So we had the majority of the Australian fleet, the naval fleet there. So I think when you look at the shipyards and what we intend to do with them, as well as doing the fabrication for the infrastructure projects, you know, we've got five markets, six services in each market. And I think the key thing, you know, numerous shipyards over the years have failed, and they've failed because they've either concentrated on defence or they've concentrated on oil and gas. And look, you know, that there's peaks and troughs in every industry, and what we are keen to do is make sure that we're having five different markets, which is defence, cruise and ferry, commercial, oil and gas, and renewables. You know, whilst one market might be dropping off a bit, the other markets will be buoyant. But inside those markets, we've got the services we offer, which really is a full life cycle service from technical services at the beginning, which is all your design work, then fabrication. And the fabrication's interesting. It could be parts of ships, it could be whole ships, it could be bridges, it could be bits for power stations. So there's a whole array of fabrication works that can go on there through to the repairs and maintenance and the dry docks. And, you know, since we bought Belfast, we've had 19 ships through the dry docks there since we got the yard back in operation. In service support, that's when you take people out around the globe working on vessels while they're working, then bigger conversion work, then at the end of the life cycle, decommissioning. So that's like when all the oil rigs come out the North Sea. We're one of a couple of yards in the UK that's got a decommissioning license, so we bring them in and decommission them. And I think that there's a couple of announcements that's come out recently from our Prime Minister. One yesterday was his Green Industrial Revolution, where, you know, we cover off offshore wind in the fabrication bit of the business. We cover off hydrogen because the gas storage project will go to hydrogen towards the end of the life cycle. We've got nuclear through fabrication. We've got the green maritime with the upgrades in the shipyards. And, you know, carbon capture could come into the gas caverns as well. So we've got 50% of that initiative. And then the announcement that came out today that we were actually named, our two yards were named. I just posted something on LinkedIn recently about that, saying that, you know, it's the biggest defence spending for 30 years. Mm-hmm. So, look, we've got all to play for, really, you know.
Yeah, and when you took on sort of, you were thinking about acquiring the shipyards, did you realise, you know, like you said, people have tried before and failed there. Did you realise straight away that there was, you know, maybe diversification was where they lacked, you know, and why they failed?
Well, I think, look, I did a study several years ago why shipyards failed. And when I was out in Australia, one of the things I did, I went into that yard when it just hit the wall and run out of defence work and it didn't have anything. So I put in a very similar strategy and increased the workforce from 60 to 1,800 in a period of 15 months. So it's not something new to me. I've done it before, and it's come through, and we sort of tried and tested it, you know?
Yeah. Okay. And as far as, you know, I suppose the commercial side of Infrastrata, where are you in the journey of development here? You know, if you could say on a percentage terms or in a yearly term, I mean, you know, how long will this journey take? I mean, what's the plan going forward, looking over, say, 3, 6, 9 months, maybe a couple of years into the line? What's happened? What's your ambition?
Well, look, I think we spent the first year really sorting out the business and what we inherited We spent the last year really bringing our strategy into play. So we think, you know, by the end of next year, we'll start to see things really picking up and really ticking into where we want to be. So I think we're probably, if you look at this as a five-year project, mm-hmm. we're probably 1 year into the 5 years. And I think one of the first things I said when I came in, we were looking to create long-term shareholder growth. And, you know, this wouldn't be a short turnaround. It would be a medium to long turnaround. But I think those two announcements by the PM this week has probably just shortened that journey a little bit. Mm-hmm. And look, I think when you look at the changes that's happening in the renewable market and this big drive green that we're having, there's simply not enough fabrication facilities in the UK to keep up with probably half of this work if all of it comes through. So I think there's huge potential. But you look at this green drive to get, you know, all homes heated by electric within the next sort of 30 years. And bearing in mind 85% of homes are powered by gas at the moment, you know, the first transition will be to transfer away from gas into electric. But don't forget, before you're 10, 15 years away from getting all the renewables up to speed. So you've really got a massive transition period where gas-fired power stations are going to carry the load. So the gas storage is needed more now than ever, especially with Brexit. Mm. And, you know, the UK has got less than 2% of our annual gas demand in storage compared with our European neighbours who've got 25 to 30%. And, you know, now that we're not on so good terms with them, the chance of us getting sent gas when there's a problem with the supply chain will be a lot less likely than it was before. So I think, you know, especially Northern Ireland and the island of Ireland, I think you're likely to see energy blackouts or certainly brownouts over the period. So I think things will certainly change over the time. And, you know, I think that gas storage project, we originally saw it running its whole life as gas. We don't believe that's the case now. We think it will start off as gas, then slowly transition to hydrogen as hydrogen comes into play. But, you know, we had a recent independent report for that project that says, you know, during construction there'll be 400 jobs and an economic benefit of 400 to 600 million to the local economy. So certainly where we are with a global pandemic, it will be a much needed boost to the local area, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're looking forward now, just in the next sort of big milestone, next, you know, big achievement, what are you hoping to you know, scratch off the list there?
Well, I think there's two things, really. I think there's one, we've got the ship repair side of the business in Harland and Wolff up and running. Mm. We're looking to get the fabrication side moving by the end of the year. And look, there'll be an order into Appledore, which is the Devon yard. We're looking to get something in there probably the first half of next year. So I think that's the two or three bits on the shipyard and fabrication side. On the gas storage side, the marine license is the thing we're looking for, so we can get the final investment decision taken next year. And, you know, because don't forget, it's now a shovel-ready project, so there's a lot more schemes available for financing that. They'll see us retaining at project level a higher equity level than we perhaps may have done, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Well, John, every day on the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies, and to get on that list, lots of people have to hit that follow button on your page, and if they do that, they get your news straight to the front screen of their smartphone whenever you release the news. So, three reasons, please, why someone should hit that follow button on your page.
Well, I think, look, we're at the start of the journey. We've got the green industrial revolution that we play into 50%. So we know there's a chunk of work coming from there into the business. We've got the largest shipyard estate in the UK with 120 acres. And when you've got the largest defence spending announcement just been made, it's certainly a great place to be. Wind and tidal, we see that as massive. And we've got, again, the track record in wind, and we've got tidal, the facilities for it. And look, I think we're substantially undervalued in FID for Isle of Magee. We hope to take early in 2021.
Excellent stuff. John, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin. Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is George Franceschides, Executive Chairman of Alba Mineral Resources. ALBA is ticker. George, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. Good to speak to you.
Yeah, it's been a while, isn't it? And you've been busy.
We have been busy, indeed.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think last time we spoke was must have been a couple of years ago, and now you've got a full range of assets and minerals there, so we'll dig into that. In fact, before we talk about your news today, which is in my homeland, in Wales, of course, Welsh gold, the best gold in the world. I'm biased, but I mean, before we dig into that, George, for people maybe not so familiar with Alba Mineral Resources, just give them an overview of what it's all about, please.
Sure. Well, Alba's a mineral exploration company and a development company. We're trying to put our assets into production. That's the name of the game. We've got a good, really strong portfolio of assets in Wales, Ireland and Greenland on the mining front. We've also got some oil and gas investments, which are in England. The focus is on the mining assets, always has been. We're doing really good work at Clogeye. The Clogeye gold mine was one of the biggest producers, or the biggest producer of gold in the UK's history. We're in Greenland in a big way. We've got some really good assets there. We've had a little bit of a hiatus because of coronavirus in terms of the work we're able to do in Greenland, but we hope to get that cracking again next year. And we've got this new news, as you say, today, which is that we've taken the exploration rights over the Gwynfynnoth gold mine, which is the UK's second largest producer of gold in history. So we're pretty well set there, and we think we're in a very good place in terms of the work we're doing in Wales.
Yeah, and I've got to compliment you on the pronunciation there. It's all good, Dave. You've been practicing, George, have you?
I'm getting used to it, Justin. Yeah, I'm getting used to it.
Well, I mean, it sounds obvious to me, but just explain again, you know, why you've gone for this, you know, the extended your area in Wales with Gwynfynnoth there, you know, and you've got Clogeye as well. So why have you gone for a bigger area?
Yeah, well, look, gold is obviously at an all-time high at the moment. It's come off a little bit, but it's still around $1,900 an ounce. That's an all-time high since records began. So, you know, gold is a very good place to be. And we don't look cyclically, to be honest. We look at the fundamentals of a project. What we're always looking for, or often looking for, is where there's been past production history, because often, you know, they didn't have the same modern mining methods and exploration methods and techniques that we can apply nowadays to projects. So there's no doubt there's gold left behind at Clogeye, and there's no doubt there's gold left behind at Gwynfynnoth. There's no doubt there's extensions to the gold veins at both of those mines that haven't been worked before. It's a question of finding them, and we're using a lot of very, very modern techniques and methods and bringing a lot of science to bear at Clogeye, and we expect to do exactly the same thing at Gwynfynnoth. So it was a no-brainer, really, that when this area became available, that we put our hat in the ring, because, you know, we've done really good work at Clogeye, and we wanted to join the dots, because Gwynfynnoth sits there in the middle of the Dolgellau gold belt between our existing license areas. So as your listeners might have seen from the announcement today, if you look at the map of the Dolgellau gold belt, we've now been able to join the entire length of the gold belt under license, essentially, to ourselves. So we can now do some really joined up thinking, and we can crack on with work the length and breadth of that gold belt, which is in our own country, in our own backyard.
Yeah. Well, I'm just looking at the previously, you know, historically produced ounces from there, and the grams per ton, and the cost back then. You know, just enlighten us on that.
Yeah, well, look, it's shut down. Proper operations, commercial operations, shut around 1999, when the gold price was $300 an ounce. So we're talking now six times plus gold price at around $1,900 an ounce. So the economics are fundamentally different now for gold. Gold in Wales has always been, as you say, a bit special, because it's always fetched a premium price, and we expect that to continue. That's to do with its heritage, the history that associates with these famous gold mines, and the fact that the British royal family has always used, well, for the last 100 years, has used Welsh gold for their wedding bands. So it has a number of reasons, and its scarcity as well. You know, the fact there isn't a lot of it in the market. So we expect to get a premium price on any Welsh gold that we produce. So the economics are fundamentally good, and they're even better when you consider the price of gold at the minute. So with both Clogau and Glenfinnes, we really expect to, you know, there was, as I said, it was a bit of a no-brainer. There's, you know, it was something that we really wanted to bring into the fold so that we can roll out exactly the same work at Glenfinnes, because the geology, mineralogy, a lot of it is pretty much the same as Clogau, as you'd expect, because it's all in the same, you know, Clogau formation. It's the same geological formation. So we've now got, you know, under our belts close to 3 years of work at Clogau, and as you've seen, we've been pushing that forward really hard and on a number of different fronts to get that back into production. So we're going to roll out exactly the same program at Glenfinnes. So we know what we're doing. We're pretty excited to get cracking there as well.
Yeah, and to be honest, I can't see the gold price, you know, coming back a lot in present times. Is I think, you know, there'll be a lot of economic stimulus needed, and of course, printing money is always good for gold. So, where are you at the moment then with Clogau and Glenfinnes, and what's next, George?
Yeah, so Clogau, we're in the middle of surface drilling. We finished our underground drilling, did about 500 metres underground. We pulled out 36 tonnes of a bulk sample, because the nature of this deposit, both at Clogau and Glenfinnes, is you can't just drill it, can't just pepper it with holes and expect to get a resource or representative grade, because it's a narrow vein nuggety effect. So there's high grade pockets, and then there's a load of barren material. So just drilling isn't enough. So you've got to drill for structure, you've got to look for the right structures. We know what we're looking for. We know the contact between the Clogau shales and the quartz veining. It's a little bit more complicated than that, but that's in essence what we're looking at. And so what we do is we drill, we look for those structures in the drilling, and we'll go back in and we'll do some more bulk sampling and some block mining. So we'll take out, you know, we'll take out tons and tons of material in a block, as it sounds, and we'll process that, and we'll get a representative, much more representative grade out of that than pure drilling alone. So it's, you know, it's a painstaking exercise. That's why we have to throw, come at it from different angles. But, you know, it's a challenge, but that's why it's there, and that's why we think there's massive prospectivity. So in essence, at Clogau, what are we doing? We're surface drilling. We've completed one hole now for about 180 metres. We're going into the lower Lech Fraith. There's a target there that we really like. We targeted it last November and we hit the right structure. We're now targeting it from a slightly different angle, well, quite a big different angle, actually. We're coming at it from a bit further away. We think we'll hit it better at this angle. We're going to hit maybe 3, 4, 5 holes. Who knows? We'll see how we go between now and the end of December. And that's really, as I say, the focus. It's that target at the lower Lech Fraith, below the known working. So we're going into virgin ground here, where we're drilling, where we think that there's a very good chance that these ore shoots continue at depth. So that's what we're going to test. So that's the news at Clogau. But also we've announced that we've got a bulk sampling lease that's been signed with the Crown Estate, which is fantastic, which means that any gold that we find in processing the gold at Clogau, we own and we can sell. We'll pay the Crown a royalty, as you should, for 4% royalty to the Crown. But it's essentially, if you like, it's mining. You know, it's mining before we're actually mining. So it's quite a very good result, really, for us to get this agreement that we can essentially exploit and sell the gold in what is essentially still an exploration phase.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, George, listen, every day on the podcast I highlight the top 5 most followed companies, and in fact on the front page of our website there is a list of top 10 most followed, and you've been in that quite a while over the last few months. So to get back in that list and get people following you, give us 3 reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please, George.
Justin, we've got a fantastic portfolio of mining assets. We've got gold mines, now Clogau and now Glenfinnes. We've got the Amitsoq graphite mine in Greenland. So I would say the three reasons are Clogai, St. David's, Gwynfyneth, and Greenland as a whole. Those are the three reasons why you should follow Alba.
Excellent stuff, George. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin. Appreciate your time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
Yeah, I'm good health, Justin. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, thanks. Good. I mean, do you know what? It's been funny. I've been looking at the news, the vaccines, and almost now becoming used to it. You know, because the first one that came along, a massive rally in the markets. And the less sort of smaller waves, haven't they? And in fact, AstraZeneca came out with
Moderna, and then the Astra one, people shrugged a little bit, didn't they, I suppose?
I think I heard there was a rumour that, in fact, it was Radio 5 Live, it was, and on the other side, they may be getting news out on a vaccine this morning. And it came out as phase two, so I don't think people, that's not good.
I mean, obviously, what you're hoping for, I mean, so you've got Pfizer and BioNTech and Moderna and AstraZeneca, you've got Johnson & Johnson. Who are hoping to finish phase three trials by the end of the year, and Novavax is working on one as well, and then you've got Russian and Chinese trials. So there's no shortage of effort being put in, which is fantastic. I mean, I guess what the markets are looking at right now is they're a little bit torn between the fact that we can see the cases and the counts where they are, whatever you think of those data, whichever you think is the right figure to focus on, because as we've discussed before, the numbers seem to move between number of cases, the number of hospitalizations, the number of deaths, and the focus generally seems to be on the one that looks worse, which I guess is, you know, important for, I guess you could argue, people keeping it, getting people to concentrate on what they're supposed to do. Equally, you know, the markets are looking at that, and on the other side, looking, well, there's a vaccine, it's kind of within touching distance, but I guess really, you know, adding up the numbers, you know, Moderna, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, they're talking about 800 million to a billion doses being available this year. And then you've got, you know, knocking on for 8 to 10 billion doses available next year. But again, with a second half waiting. So in terms of, you know, when's there going to be mass availability? Well, I don't know. I'm assuming that they will move to protect the vulnerable first, and then take it from there. So I would think that you're looking at mass vaccination, assuming that all goes well and they can work out the logistics of shipping some of these things around at cold temperatures. You know, as Private Eye pointed out this week, rather scurrilously as it would do, you know, you've obviously got some of these products that we've bought, which have got a very, very finite lifespan. So good job there'll be no border blockages come the 1st of January, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
Something to think about. So I guess you've got a number of cases now against vaccine within touching distance, but it'll only be maybe the second half of next year. So markets are a little bit torn betwixt and between. Do they worry about the now, or do they keep on trying to price in the sunnier plans of late 2021 and beyond?
Yeah. And I think there's that gap. I likened it recently. You know, we can see, there's obviously some people who are sceptical of the data there, but we can see, you know, a light at the end of the tunnel. But it's like, I remember, I always go back to the film The Titanic, and we saw it, I watched it recently with my son because he's studying it in school, and we watched the film last weekend. And I always remember that time where they said, right, the ship's going down, how long will it take? And they said, it'll take about 2 hours. Said, okay, when's the first boat going to be here? And they said, 4 hours. And with the economy at the moment, we understand there's a vaccine. Most people won't be, you know, receiving it until next year. And yet we've got a whole raft of jobs, losses and economic stimulus, and maybe another lockdown before that. So we're thinking there's a lot of, you know, bad news going to come before we actually, you know, get fully escaped or rescued by the vaccine, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's the push and the pull. And, you know, you can see what positive news can do, because we saw the dramatic rise after Pfizer and a healthy gain after Moderna, and okay, not so much after AstraZeneca. But you can see that there are the sectors that have been most affected in terms of business models and finances and cash flows. You know, they are the ones that are traveling the quickest, because they're going to show the fastest recovery from the lowest base. You know, so that's why you've had this, to some degree, this rotation from secular growth to cyclical growth, if you want to put it that way, or growth to value, because in the end, you know, these the secular growth companies, yes, fantastic stories, but they're quite expensive. They've done very well, whereas the cyclical stocks have done very badly, look cheap on vaguely normalised earnings, and they're going to show much quicker earnings from a lower base. So that's kind of the rationale. But, you know, one of the intriguing things that's caught my eye this week is that seven FTSE 100 firms, and I can even name them for you because they're in front of me in my spreadsheet, namely Vodafone, Experian, HomeServe, Intermediate Capital, SSE, Halma and Sage, have all paid unchanged or increased, or all declared unchanged or increased dividends this year, now, this week. Now, given that, you know, we spent all of the first 6 months of the year looking at dividend payments being massacred, and I think you, according to my spreadsheet, and it I do it by eye, so it's not going to be 100% accurate, but I reckon there's been about £48 billion worth of dividend cuts this year. But the bulk of those came March, April, May. The bulk since then have basically been BP, HSBC and Shell. And in June, July, August, September and November, dividend payments or restorations have outpaced cuts. So I think what I'm not saying that we're through that. Again, it's all sun from here. Mm. But looking at companies having planned for the worst and hoped for the best, yeah. I think in terms of their worst case planning, it feels like we haven't perhaps quite got there, and that they've hunkered down, they've cut costs, they've preserved cash. In some cases, they've taken government assistance, and I think there's the debate over should companies be paying dividends that before they pay back the assistance is going to rattle around for a bit. And understandably so, but it does feel as if there's also some light at the end of the tunnel for the hard-pressed income seeker, in that you are starting to see payments and restorations outpace cuts relatively consistently. And I mean, this month so far in November, we've had £600 million worth of cuts and £5 billion worth of restorations and payments declared. So that, you know, if that trend continues, that does offer some scope for hope for equity markets, and particularly income seekers in 2021 and beyond. I mean, the FTSE 100 is offering about 3.9% yield for 2021 on paper. Now, there are some big challenges there. You're very heavily reliant upon some fairly tricky sectors to forecast, i.e. oil, banks, insurance and miners. So you would argue that the quality is not necessarily the highest. But as we've discussed before, it's for all of the understandable desire to see a move toward renewables and away from carbon-intensive industries, it really isn't hard to construct a case for oil prices going up. We discussed it 3 or 4 weeks ago, and actually, unusually for us, they have done since. So that's quite nice. It's nice to, you know, broken clocks are always right twice a day, I suppose, aren't they? So, I think that case still persists, although we'll see what OPEC say at their meeting in early December. They can obviously put a spanner in the works. But I think with oil, you can construct a case. Banks just need the economic recovery, the yield curve to steepen, ditto insurers and miners. So, oddly enough, the UK's dividends are going to be quite cyclically based in some ways. So, again, the quality isn't perhaps as high as you might think. But if you get that 3.89% dividend yield, that you'd like to think would put a bit of a floor under the market in the sort of 6 to 6.5 thousand range on the FTSE.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So I honestly think that, like I said, spoke last week, the turn in the tide was that announcement of Pfizer. You saw the market shoot up, and the sectors that actually rallied were the ones, you know, that had been hammered down. So that was a turning point, I think. But like I said, we are going to see some volatility. And even though some of these companies have said this dividend is going to be happening and announced, that's a bullish thing, I suppose, but we're going to see some volatility. Even today I saw a Reuters poll saying we're in for a double dip recession, you know, so which I suppose a lot of it is expected anyway, isn't it? You'll be locked down in the economy, I suppose.
I think to some degree. I mean, you've seen UK consumer confidence roll over. You know, it'll be interesting to see US consumer confidence next week. Because you've got the president, that might start to reflect the fact that Joe Biden is president-elect. You know, he's not confirmed yet. We haven't had the casting of the votes in the Electoral College until mid-December, and they aren't counted until the 6th of January, and then it's all actually ratified with inauguration on the 20th of January. We excited to see that. But, you know, we've seen today, we've got Treasury Secretary Mnuchin withdrawing, not giving the Fed some of the money for some of its programs, $455 billion, I think Congress should be involved in spending that. So now this is interesting. You know, central banks have been calling all the shots. Now you've actually got Treasury saying, you know what, we're going to decide where some of this money goes, not you, which I think is philosophically and politically very interesting from a a monetary policy perspective. Yeah. And you've got, you know, some of the US programs beginning to expire and people still waiting to see what Capitol Hill does in terms of the next stimulus program. So at the moment, as we discussed last week, you know, the US savings rate and disposable income figures are through the roof. So if you do get a speedy resolution to this, the American consumer has got quite a bit of spare cash to play with. Now, they may just decide to pay down credit card debt, which is what they've been doing, you would argue, from a financial advisor's point of view, quite sensibly for the last 9 months. But who's to say when they start seeing a bit of sunshine again and some good news that they don't go back on the spending trail? And, you know, that, again, could be a big fillip for the economy late 2021 onwards. As you say, it's how we get from A to B is going to be, I think, the potential source of volatility, as you rightly say, the next 6 or 9 months.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, always look further down the line rather than you. I said, you know, it's a lot easier to predict if you're investing in a company as to predict where they're going to be in, say, 12 months' time rather than where the market's going to be next week, because
one of the most difficult questions I get asked is, what do you think the FTSE is going to do on the day of Brexit? Well, to which my response is, well, you tell me where it is on the day of Brexit, and then I've got a view. Yeah, because if the FTSE is at 5,000, it'll behave very differently from it to 8,000.
Yeah, exactly.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that sort of question is understandable, but it's totally impossible to answer unless you know what your starting point is.
Yeah, exactly. Marvellous stuff, Russ. Thanks for that, fella.
Keep well.
I'll speak next week.
I look forward to it.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are, I'll do a selection, I think. In fact, Alba Mineral Resources on there, up 9%, 0.49. What else is there? Amiga Diagnostics, always popular, up just shy of 1% to 55.5. Immedia Group, that's up 13% at 26 pence. Rolls-Royce is there, up 2.4 to £1. And again, remote monitored systems. It's flown, but it's down today, 1.85 pence to 2.65. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. Kavanga Resources, publication of prospectus. Zoetic International, trading update at 4. At 3, Practice Holdings, director shareholding. At 2, Gene Drive, high clinical accuracy in India study. And at 1, it's George. And that's Alba Mineral Resources, Award of... Well, it's not George, it's Alba. George is the CEO, the executive chairman. Award of Exploration Licence and Cloyguy Update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.